We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Feel like Kobe in the fourth quarter.
This is the Dame More NBA podcast brought to you by Blue Wire Podcasts. It's Tuesday, November 23rd. I'm joined by Britt Robson of MinPost. This will be my last podcast here leading up to Thanksgiving Day. The Wolves are on a four-game winning streak. They play Jimmy Butler and the Miami Heat tomorrow night, Wednesday evening. Britt, I was thinking about it as just getting ready for the pod today. And we've probably done like maybe 100 podcasts together over the years.
Could be.
And yeah. I don't know if we've ever done a podcast while the Wolves were on a four-game winning streak or really any sort of winning streak. So I just give that to you open-ended to start of like,
right,
this is a pretty different place to start thinking about the Wolves right now than we have been at. And so just where are you just generally at in your head as the Wolves sit here 8-9 on a four-game winning streak?
Well, I'm reassured because I came into this season probably more optimistic about this team than I've been in, certainly since Tibbs's first season. I actually thought that when Tibbs took the job and it was apparent that Wiggins and Towns had some offensive skills but were lacking in defense, that I thought that that would be a great match and that this team would finish over 500. I think,
and they finished with what,
29 wins. But then, you know, then the second year, of course, they finished with 46, I think. And so, but the point being, when this team was 4-9 and had lost 8 of 9 and 3 of its 4 wins were against the dregs, I began to wonder whether or not I had grossly miscalculated this team. I had kept the faith.
I wondered that about you, too.
But I kept the faith because I had faith in the defense, and I thought the offense would come around. But the Wolves have bushwhacked you from so many different ways that it wouldn't have surprised me if the Wolves continue to play great defense but get submarined by, for some reason, a ridiculously bad offense. It actually kind of happened last night. If they hadn't been playing a team the caliber of New Orleans, they may have lost on the basis of another shitty offensive performance. But defense is a better regulator of quality than offense. You know, not necessarily in the modern NBA, but the game I grew up with and the game that I continue to cherish, I just trust good defensive teams better than I trust good offensive teams. And so I was saying, man, at least they play good defense. If they wind up winning 28 games or 31 games and they continue to have guys like Vanderbilt and Pat Bev and McDaniels and Okogie flying around, I'm still going to have fun. I mean, that's kind of where my mindset relegated to during the losing streak. And then when I want to, you know, actually, I thought the game, and I think the team, just by the way they talk, feels this way. The Phoenix game was a big game because they played really well. And that was a fun game to watch. Two really good teams going at it is what it felt like. And Phoenix got pushed Chris Paul had to be Chris Paul. You know, Devin Booker had to be Devin Booker. And so I think that gave them a little bit of hope and confidence. And then, you know, they got set up with three, you know, subsequently Sacramento's fired its coach. We don't know if Greg Popovich cares anymore. And, you know, and the Pelicans are a mess, you know, and so.
Well, that's what's kind of the tough part of this right now, Britt. I think we're both, you know, leaning into the optimism of this some too. But I don't know. I guess the way I've been viewing it over the course of the week, just doing pods after every one of these games, is I'm like, all right, this week was kind of, after the Phoenix game, was kind of like climbing the ladder. And not even to that high of a rung. But, right. Like, I thought that the Sacramento game and the San Antonio game, the back-to-back right there, you basically, you need to assert your dominance over those two teams, because if you can feel confident that the Timberwolves are better than the Kings and the Spurs, then you feel confident that the Timberwolves are going to be a play-in team at a minimum this season. Because all it takes is five teams.
Right.
You know, being better than five teams in the West to make the play-in as the 10 seed. And we know Houston's a lock to be down there. We know New Orleans is a lock to be down there. We know Oklahoma City. So that's three right there.
But we don't know about Oklahoma City. That's what's crazy.
We know, though. Given what we saw the second half of last year and the adjustments they'll make, I feel, we can't say with any certainty, but I think for sure, well, actual certainty, I think we could say that those are the five bottom teams in the league. And the Wolves, at a minimum now in the Western Conference, we can feel confident in saying they're the 10th seed in the West, and that should be the floor for expectations. So, you know, that's the climbing up the ladder Wednesday, Thursday. And then on Saturday, they crushed Memphis, who's the next tier up, right? If you think you're better than Memphis, now you can start talking to yourself about an 8th seed. And, you know, just winning a couple games in a week doesn't mean you're certainly better than those teams, but it allows you to glean the possibility, right? That you are dominant over those teams. We know that the Wolves have superior talent to those three squads. So to see them put it together, yeah, like, I think it's worth it to get encouraged. But again, like, the ladder they climbed isn't exactly like 15 feet tall, right? It's a ladder to the 10th seed.
And it's kind of where I thought they'd be. I didn't know, you know, I'd still say that between 35 and 41 has been my window. I think it's a realistic window. I'm not saying to myself, this is a 45 win team. This is a, you know, 48 win team on the basis of two really lopsided scores after two workmanlike wins over bad teams. You know, that's still a 4-game win streak, and that's great. I think the thing that encourages me the most is that they're beginning to develop winning habits that come with a pattern of confident success. And I think whether or not that winds up being like, if Wednesday's game is as good as the Phoenix game, I'm happy. I love the idea of, you know, them going tooth and nail against a Heat team, maybe Bam. I don't know if Bam will be back for that or not. But Jimmy Butler will be there, and Tyler Hero's playing well, and, you know, PJ Tucker, you know, they've got some pieces. And so I think that the Heat is another, I mean, one of the good things about this is I'm kind of interested in seeing the big three on offense. And then our four guys for the purposes of the starters, which is probably the column I'm going to write tomorrow, is just how Pat Bev and Vando, you know, complement that starting lineup. And
totally.
And I think that that's become a thing. And I think a lot of people would be bummed out if that wasn't the status quo going forward, the players most of all. And as a result, you can see how Pat Bev and Vando inspire D'Lo, Ant, and Cat to play better defense. They have, you know, they've got something, let's say they're just playing selfishly. They have a chance to really rehabilitate their image now. They're not going to be some doofus trying on defense while the team breaks down around them, you know, which is kind of what you saw from the Pelicans the other night, a sense of hopelessness, which we recognize all too well. I think what we're seeing now is the opposite of that. I think we're seeing a gradual awakening, D'Lo especially, starting to extend his levels of focus on defense has been a really rewarding thing to see, because it's important. He's got tools that can be good defensive tools, and he's smart. So he's got a ceiling on defense that has raised for me so far this year. And so all that is to say that whether or not the wins wind up being 41 or 35 or 38, you know, they're going to lose in the playoffs early. That's the ceiling for the season. And so I'm not, you know, I'm big on the experience. You can't cover the Wolves as long as I have without just basically treating the season as an experience. And it can be an extremely pleasurable experience and have a play-in game or have close losses to good teams where you see quality basketball happen. I'm ready for that step. I think this team is capable of that step. If they do anything beyond that, then they're going to be all the more fun. But if they don't do that at this point, now having shown that they can put together a defensive strategy, while there will be regression inevitably in some ways, it will not be a bottom six defense unless they let go of the rope. And, you know, that's a good feeling to have.
I totally. And I think this all ties together. We're probably going to steal some of your thoughts from the Beverly Vando.
Oh, that's all right. Column. Actually, maybe you'll contribute to them. I haven't written it yet.
Well, what I've been really thinking about, it stood out to me after the Spurs game, was this idea of Jared Vanderbilt being a very, it's kind of wild because he's this wild player, right? He's he's all over the place, but his impact is consistent, right? Mm-hmm. It is the same thing, you know, night over night. You're gonna get the same thing. There's little variance on what his impact will be. You know, sometimes he's gonna grab more offensive rebounds, whatever. But there's beginning to be this pattern recognition by the players that surround him that expect this out of Jared Vanderbilt.
Right.
And I think that there's power in that consistency. And I think Patrick Beverley also is a player like that, with little variance on what he's going to get night to night or give night to night. It's consistent. And Cat, Ant, and D'Lo being such high usage players are inherently going to be variable, right? Like it's going to be up nights and down nights. So there's become this yin and this yang, and there's become this balance of expectation, not huge expectation, but reasonable expectation from Patrick Beverley and Jared Vanderbilt that I think is just starting to have exponential returns for this team. And, you know, the one thing I noted on the pod a couple nights ago is how teammates are expecting Jared Vanderbilt to get the offensive rebound and then kick it out to him in the corner. Like, you don't see that normally in the NBA. There's just, and it's the same thing, you know, I could list a handful of different things with Patrick Beverley, but the controlled nature of what they bring is really, really making a difference. And it's a really kind of fun thing to peel the layers back on, because I mean, the numbers on this team are kind of a fun science experiment, right?
Yeah.
Where it's interesting to dig into, from the you know, the D'Lo defensive rating under 100 to to this, and the synergy of the top three. And the one thing that really stood out to me a few nights ago that I hadn't peeled back a ton of layers on was the fact that, you know, Cat, Ant, and D'Lo now have played 300 minutes together, and they have a net rating of plus 13.1. And the defensive rating's awesome on that. It's it's 97.1 on the season. And so you go, oh my gosh, this these three offensive one-way players have put together a sub 100 defensive rating. And you know, you start giving credit to Cat and Anthony D'Lo, which they all deserve some from the growth they've given. But then you factor in that almost exactly half of those 300 minutes have been played with Patrick Beverley, and almost exactly half of them haven't been played with Patrick Beverley. And it's fascinating. In the 154 of those 300 minutes with Patrick Beverley, the net rating's plus 24.4 that foursome.
And Vando. I mean, those are the stats I've been looking at as the four-man stats with those guys really show you. I mean, right. And what's great about that is it's both ways. That you just got through talking about Vando getting the offensive rebound, kicks it out. Vando is feeding open threes. If you're doing that from the perimeter, you're a point guard. But if you're doing that from underneath the hoop, it's actually almost a better pass because odds are it's going to the corner. And so it's an open corner three. And so Vando is operating as like a third wave point guard on this team. You know, in terms of the fact that he's grabbing the offensive rebound and dishing to the corner, this is one of the things I'm going to write about tomorrow, is that both of these guys, Pat Bev is setting these incredible back picks on people and burying these three-pointers whenever people leave him. You know, the other night he paused forever, and usually when that happens, it isn't necessarily a good thing when a defender is just saying, all right, you know, MF, shoot, you know, see what you can do. And he went up and nailed the three, you know, and it's like, oh, Kogi can't do that. Jade McDaniels probably can't do that. You know that, you know, Vando can't do that from that distance. And so Pat Bev and Vando are contributing at both ends. And that's what makes it, they are quote unquote one-way players. Now, you can't say that about Pat Bev, but Vando has created a little niche for himself where he's becoming a two-way player. And as a result, as you say, the guys who really will remember a teammate when they're being rewarded, and some of that is covering for them on defense, but some of that is also just zipping the ball to them wide open for a three. And then the other thing I want to say, just in the way that I love that they're together as a five-man unit, but also the way that the niche defensive guy is in the mix, is that Vando inspires physically and Pat Bev inspires mentally and psychologically. And so that combination is really cool because the moment that Ant wants to take a play off, next thing you know, I mean, Vando's flying around and getting the ball or chasing down his man or, you know, or conversely, you know, the next time he's a little late to something, Pat Bev is in his ear saying, hey, you know, get over there. So it's like, it's separate forms of discipline and separate forms of example tone setting. And consequently, it is more complementary. It's more exponentially or synergistically positive. And so it just, and you know, it could fall apart. Teams fall in and out of rhythms. And right now they're obviously in a great rhythm. And as you pointed out, you know, they're three-pointers. New Orleans missed a ton of open three-pointers the other night.
We'll get to that.
and so there is that. But you have also D'Lo, Cat, and Ant taking plays off, but fewer plays off, contesting more, rotating more diligently, taking pride in the fact that they're a winning team right now, and consequently operating in a manner that is bringing them all together in a certain way. And so, yeah, I mean, right now it's such a rare thing, but that's the way it happens. That's how you win games in the NBA. Who knew, you know?
100%. Let's take a quick break and then we'll come back. I want to talk about the impact I think Chris Finch is playing in all this. I think that's a lot of the glue there. Today's episode is brought to you by 20 by 20 Solutions, a Minneapolis-based technology consulting company that works with your business to help you build and sustain success. A great front office puts together a winning team with a coach who can put together a winning strategy. When leadership does its job and it all comes together, that means success. Success in business isn't any different. Business leaders need to find the right mix of technology, strategy, and talent to make things really work. And that's never been truer for growing companies. 20 by 20's team has helped grow companies from thousands of customers to tens of millions by helping businesses across a wide range of industries, from consumer technology and healthcare to manufacturing and even human spaceflight. Reach out to Clark and Ben, who are Wolves fans and fans of this show, by emailing them at team@20by20solutions.com. That's T-E-A-M at 20x20solutions.com. And their team will review your needs and help you put together a plan before you need to make any commitments. 20 by 20 Solutions, technology, workflow, architecture, strategy. They're your sixth man on a winning team. All right, we are back talking with Britt Robson of MemPost. Kind of reacting today to the four-game winning streak of where the Wolves are at. I think it's probably been four games exactly since we last recorded. And we were kind of positive. You were kind of positive about the defense coming in. I was a slower adapter. You were convincing me. And I think where my head is kind of adjusted over the course of the week is a growing belief in Chris Finch and what's gone into a lot of different things from a coaching standpoint. I think the defense is probably the greatest example of this, but everything we were just describing with figuring out the yin and yang with Patrick Beverley and Jared Vanderbilt and going to that being the starting five when it wasn't an easy quest to discern what the best starting five is or what the best rotation is. Like, I think credit to Chris Finch that he's kind of landing on all these sort of things. And, you know, it took a while. I think there were some rotation hiccups along the way, figuring out how to find that flow. But you are finding that flow. And I think we could talk about the defense a little bit more, but the one thing I think has proven to be really smart is just the way he's used D'Angelo Russell from a rotation standpoint. I think last year when D'Lo came back from injury was a real blessing in disguise. He came off the bench for the first 15 games after he came back from injury. And really his like minute cap, I think, was like 28. We kept asking Finch about when are you going to put him back in the starting lineup, this and that. And he's like, we can control the minutes when he comes off the bench. But also he kept saying this is kind of working, D'Lo with the second unit. And holy shit, D'Lo with the second unit is working tremendously this year. My opinion was it should be Ant should be the one staggered going into the season or early in the season. He should be the one staggered.
Right.
Especially
because it looked to me anyway, like D'Lo and Beasley in the backcourt was a recipe for other teams going on huge runs.
Good point. Right. But this D'Lo, these last four games Josh Okogie's been out of the mix because he's been hurt, but it's been this D'Lo plus Beasley plus Prince plus McDaniels plus Naz Reid. And kind of, Vanderbilt when Naz was hurt a little bit.
Right.
But really, D'Lo and four bench guys-ish sort of thing. And it's thriving. The net rating numbers on D'Angelo Russell this year are absolutely astounding. I don't have them in front of me exactly, but I know last night
it's
when
in
I
the 20s.
It out,
yeah.
Yeah, he's like plus 27 net rating on the year. Yeah. And the next highest rotation player on the Wolves is Anthony Edwards at plus 7.
Right.
I mean, it's...
Only because Okogie's been hurt.
Exactly. I said rotation players. But credit to Chris Finch there, because as a group that's working and D'Lo still isn't shooting great. Last night was a poor shooting performance.
Not shooting great is an understatement. It's probably the worst shooting of his career.
It is.
And he's probably been as valuable as he's ever been in his career. That's what's cool.
It is, and I think that's again, there's a ton of nuance to to dig into there, and like anything, like this 3-point shooting stuff, whatever. There's is it all 100% true, accurate? Chris Finch isn't even dodging away from it. He's like, we're gonna have to see where this all shakes out, right? Mm-hmm. It's D'Lo's not gonna be a plus 27 net rating the whole year, 20 points better than the rest of the start. There's gonna be some balancing out, but he's gonna shoot better. Too.
Yes, exactly.
And I just am I'm really encouraged by the fact that they've found something there, because let's call it what it is, like coming into the season, for particularly after the first week, like there's some D'Angelo Russell like alarm bells going off.
Right.
And really, since he's come back from that injury, for the most part, those have been silenced in terms of the impact at least he's having on the floor and the Wolves winning games when he's out there, even if his scoring isn't individually making the difference, which was before the only thing you really were like, that's what he does.
And I was kind of disappointed in his answer to me the other night. I wanted him to take credit to some extent for deliberately going to the hoop and getting fouls, doing that hardened straight arm move he does, which was non-existent for like the first 8 to 10 games of the season, and has been a staple of his performance. And the idea that he didn't make a conscious effort to do it, you know, I always dislike it when players are disingenuous with me on things where I'm just basically leading them to an answer that I know is the truth, you know? I mean, yeah, and actually it would have been a complimentary thing. But D'Lo, the rap on D'Lo last year, even when he was really shooting well, is the guy doesn't get to the cup and he doesn't get the efficiencies of that kind of thing. And if Finch wasn't going to run pick and rolls, and if he wasn't going to take it upon himself to do dribble penetration, then he was going to be a glorified combo guard, you know, who was shooting 30%. And even though his defense was much better, that wasn't going to help his offense very much. So,
but Britt, let's go back a couple months earlier in the season, because you're talking about the end of the season there, right? Once he came back from injury.
Well, I'm actually mostly talking about this season, but he wasn't getting to the cup early in this season. He was shooting from outside a lot.
And I thought, well, because I've been seeing the same thing, thinking about like, man, this is profit when D'Lo's getting all the way to the rim.
Exactly.
And I went back into my brain of thinking about how last year during that real morass of no Cat and a bunch of injuries, and it was the D'Lo show.
Right.
Obviously, that was not a
that was the Ryan Saunders time too. Right.
But do you remember what showed up in that time was D'Lo, because he had so much usage thrust upon him, he did show the ability to get to the rim. I remember that Oklahoma City game specifically.
Like 15 free throws or something, right?
Yeah, and it was just like high pick and roll with him and Nas every time.
Right.
And you saw like, all right, if D'Lo, it's not his preferred method of offensive creation, but he has the ability to get down and get to the rim like occasionally. And it's something I think he flexed back away from, you know, once Cat got back, Ant kind of hit the next level. But it's an important thing to be in the mix with his game. And I think if we do see his individual offense start to turn around, we'll go, oh, yeah, the free throw rate went up. Oh, yeah, his frequency of shots within 5 feet went up. And I think that's what's happening. And it's, you know, it's one of those pretty like intuitive things, right? It's like pressure on the rim leads to better spacing around you, being able to spray the ball out. Like that's an important factor of his best version of his game.
And you make a good point that I didn't factor into the equation, which is a lot of this has been happening when Cat and Ann are off the floor, which means that that lane is open, you know, because if it's not Cat and Ann, then it winds up being, you know, Torian Prince and Nas, you know, or whatever. And they're not lane cloggers like, you know, Cat and Ant can be, or at the very least, you want to leave the lanes open for Ant, and you want to, you know, at least in the old Cat, the new Cat proclaimed himself to be no longer a low post guy. And I say, let's, you know, hail to you. I mean, I'm glad if if he figured that out, then great, good for him. As long as he's not with his back to the defenders who are coming to double team him and then, you know, doing the infamous stray voltage, then I think that, you know, he is playing better. Ant is playing better. But specific to D'Lo, I agree with you. First of all, the defense is what I notice first because it is so much better. But I do also think that what we're seeing is D'Lo saying, you know, this second string point guard. I can beat off the dribble, or I can do my dipsy doodle game. I can get to the rim, long story short. And with these guys who don't see a guy my caliber all the time when they're on the floor, I can get fouls. And I think that he's a smart guy. I just wish he didn't say, I've always done this, or, you know, I'm not changing. Yeah. I'm not changing anything, you know.
It's his prerogative. You know, obviously he's got a different, you know, public facing personality than, you know, him and Kat. When those two both come up for post camp press conferences, like, couldn't be more, you know, more different. But I think just, yeah, I mean, I guess maybe kind of cap the D'Lo thing. Like, he came into media day saying what he said, contract year, wanting to have something to prove. That was something I think I actually found encouraging at the beginning of, like, all right, like, he's going to bring it for all 82 starting right out the bat. And then, you know, the first eight games come off and you're like, ooh, not, this isn't lining up. And I think that led maybe not just me, but a lot of people watching to go, okay, maybe that next level just isn't there. Right. And man, it's just as, you know, as someone who enjoys covering this team when they're clicking a little bit better, it really is encouraging. And then just, you know, simultaneously to see Ant and Kat around him start to fit a little bit better and come together. And there's I think we're beginning to see there is another level for this offense. The offensive numbers, like you said, still aren't that good, but Kat is figuring out how to place himself, and Ant, you know, it's always a bit of an adventure, but you know, I think we're going to see this offense go up specifically in that three-man unit.
And again, you can give Finch some credit there, because Finch is the guy in explaining what is happening. He always emphasizes what should be happening.
Totally.
And so that, you know, he's giving players credit for the things he wants them to do. And they're doing like 75% of it, but there's that 25% where you're going, this is the wishful thinking coming out here, but it's also a smart thing,
he's a dreamer.
Well, and he's also, it's
his not way, a bad way. Like,
it's his way of also saying, hey, you know, this is what you need to do. And I'm praising you for doing this, even though you're not doing it right now. And so therefore people are going to think you are doing it, and they'll notice when you're not, or something, but it does seem to work out. I was really happy, for example, to see D'Lo's first offensive move the other night was a pass to Kat that if it hadn't been fouled, there would have been a slam dunk. And I know that it shocked the shit out of Memphis. They thought D'Lo was going to hoist a three like everybody else and clank it. But I mean, that's a first quarter tradition. And instead, you know, Kat just started just pounding on JV in all the ways that you want to see Kat play. Kat played. I mean, that up fake for a slam, I thought, man, whoever got in his head to convince him to do that, you know, buy him a beer. And if it was Kat himself.
No, it was a coffee.
That's right. And if it was Kat himself, then hats off to you, Kat. You know, I mean, sometimes you don't, you brag about the things that perhaps you did. And even if you did, it isn't as much fun as if you had said, I knew that I could put JV in a box out there on the perimeter. If I do an up fake, I could blow right by him. That's the kind of braggadocio I want to hear. You know, that whole, you know, Kat in unveiling the science, because he played a really smart game the other night.
He talked post game about how he's starting to figure out his spots, right?
And he used the word discipline all the time, which was encouraging, because I think that was something he really needed to think about.
Right. And it is an interesting, like, what's interesting is there are the right spots for Kat when he's being guarded by a five, and there are the right spots when he's being guarded by a small, a four, a wing, a power four,
a mobile guy, right?
And those are different. I thought, well, first, terrible game plan by the Pelicans last night. I thought they went, they looked at that game three of the season when they beat the Wolves and they go, we're just going to try and do the exact same things, you know, try and be physical with Cat, with Valanciunas, get him in his head. We're going to go with that. They like randomly started Garrett Temple because remember Temple like turned over D'Lo a bunch in that third game. And then they tried to run that pick and roll game where they just get Valanciunas going downhill when Cat's back in a drop. Well, it's like, did you guys watch the last 10 Wolves games? They're not doing any of that stuff anymore, right? Like, or what teams are having success doing against Cat is guarding him with a small and then bring in the double. And when you put a five on him, like the Lakers did, like the Grizzlies did with Adams, like Cat's going to cook that. Like, what are you doing putting Valanciunas on him? And then you saw to start the second half, what do the Pelicans do?
Right.
They put Josh Hart on him. You know, I mean, that's the book, and that's what they should be doing. And I'm really curious to see as the level of opponent goes up, maybe level of coach goes up here, is how good is Cat at knowing where his spots are based on the way in which he's being guarded, you know, and who is guarding him? Because, you know, to be honest, it's tough. He's got a tough job because those are very different things. They present different challenges. It's this weird balance of like finding your own while also not wanting to take away from Ant and D'Lo and that. So like Cat, if you know, you're going to be all NBA center this year, like you're going to have to solve that equation. And I think he's starting to, but it's going to continue to be tough because we haven't seen the Wolves totally solve the opponent going with a small on Cat sort of thing. And that's the like, you know, in the video game, that's the next boss at the next level, right? That you gotta beat. Cat, put a five on Cat that's like Steven Adams, like that's a wrap. You know,
that's what makes the Heat game so interesting, is because Bam is kind of both.
Both, totally.
Bam is a five and a mobile four.
Yeah.
You know? And so what they may do is just ignore the double, or they may bring a double with somebody like Jimmy. I mean, just throw all the resources at him. And totally flummox him.
Tucker's really good at that from the, like, if they do try to go
Tucker
to the block.
Tucker is good. I think Tucker, I agree.
They might
with
go with
you.
Tucker on him, man.
Agree with you. The problem I have with Tucker in this particular instance is he's really charge-oriented. And I think he can draw charges on Cat, but I also think that Cat's finesse, long story short, I would not trust Tucker on Cat straight up. I would much rather play him with Bam if I'm Miami, because I do think that Tucker, while he uses his body, he's a positioning guy. He's a fire hydrant that he's not as mobile as Bam. Bam can follow Cat's shenanigans better than Tucker can, in my opinion.
Right.
Tucker's better at strips. He might strip the ball. And, you know, who knows? I mean, it could be.
I know. I'm fascinated to see what they do, because you could just go with Bam on him,
or you could bring a double.
Tucker's the double. Could be the double.
And Tucker that,
remember the Houston
double,
series?
Especially the blind double, because that's when you'll get the charge. Mm. And so, or the strip on the spin. I mean, you're right. Tucker could be a really good double.
I think the answer, man, is Cat on the perimeter against them. And then off of that, like, you know, Bam's going to be up on him. Right, because he's like, I can move my feet with you, this and that. I mean, that's the time to get that inverted pick and roll going.
Right.
Like, have Cat up top and have Ant come set a screen for him. Have D'Lo come set a screen for him. Like, there's this whole, I kind of label it as like the step back Cat. Like, there's this whole other level that Cat can hit that's offensive supernova. That's in there.
Right.
And some of it is just straight isolation. Like, I'm a believer that he has this ability to just isolate on the perimeter with a step back game that, like, when he's decisive with that, like,
that's right.
I don't know. I think that's
against
nasty.
San Antonio, right?
Mm-hmm. And then I think, like, the next kind of pivot off of that too is that once they press up even further, come start setting screens for him and let him play off of that. Like, you're probably not going to see a ton of it, because that's so heavy Cat usage, and, you know, he's playing 80-90% of his minutes with Ant, and you don't want to bury Ant in the corner. Right. But man, the next time the Wolves are in a game like the Phoenix one, and there's 2 minutes left in the game, and it's a 1 or 2 point game, give me that with Cat, man. Give me Cat at the top and like go to work.
If D'Lo
individually
allows,
or for,
right. I mean, I
agree. Well, that I mean, and that's just my opinion. That's what I would right. you know, that's what right. I would love to see. And I don't know how it will work because, you know, how's it gonna all click together with the other four guys? But like,
you know yeah. what, as you've been talking and I've begun to, my mind has been wandering into matchups. Miami's going to try to beat the shit out of Vando, aren't they? I mean, they are going to, when Vando starts kamikaze, he drives to the
hoop. He flies up for one of those, like Dwayne Dedman's just going to clip it in the middle of the air.
He is going to wind up in the, past the baseline, in the photographer's row more than once. And he's going to get shoved when he's running baseline to get those rebounds. Somebody's going to give a slight chuck and send him into the bench. I mean, he is going to, you know, again, I hope I'm wrong, but that's the way I would play Vando. I mean, Vando's momentum already has him out of control. And if you just subtly tilt that a little further, you may even be able to get a foul on him without getting any whistles yourself. Right. And I do think smart scouts, and Miami strikes me as always, I mean, Eric Spoelstra always has something cooking. They will notice how much Vando has been a part of this offense now, extending possessions. And it's right up Miami's alley. Miami loves to get physical with people that are a problem for them.
Well, he's kind of like a Heat, or he's got that Heat fire. Like, he's kind of like a Heat player, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's
he's kind of like James Johnson in his heyday, you know, I mean, a guy who, you know, used to bang people around and get offensive rebounds. And it's going to be a fun game. I mean, I'm getting excited about it just thinking about it.
Let's take one more quick break here and then come back. I do want to talk specifically about the defense and the 3-point defense. We've been skipping around here.
All right.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, back with Britt Robson of Min Post. Final segment here on our, I guess, pre-Thanksgiving podcast. Recording this the day before the matchup against the Heat that we were obviously just talking about. Britt, I think the one real interesting topic, and you know, credit to some people on Twitter who I think highlighted some of this, brought it to my attention for sure too. I mean, I was aware of the fact that the Wolves defensively are getting some really good fortune in terms of three-point shooting against. Teams are shooting a league-worst 30.6% from three against the Wolves' defense. And it brings up this really interesting, you know, sort of analytics versus effort, sort of eye test, all this sort of thing conversation that is just really fascinating to me. But the real one kicker, as much as I want to lean into the, like, you know, they're contesting shots, like the craziest one is with that, the Wolves starting lineup, opponents are shooting 14% from three against them. And that's a lot of minutes. You're getting some good fortune there. So I totally fall in the middle because I think that's the logical place here, where I think the shot contests are making a difference. I also think that opponents just missing shots, not having played a tough schedule thus far, is also a big part of the reason why the Wolves defense is where it is. Where you just kind of add on this Wolves defense versus three-point variance sort of thing that's going on right now?
Well, I think as much as I am a bang the drum guy for the improved Wolves defense, I'm an unabashed cheerleader for the way they've been playing defense. Nobody in their right mind would expect NBA players to continue to hit at such a low percentage against this team. What I will say, and this is a little bit the Jim Peat idea too, I think we're aligned on this. He may even be a little bit more of a cheerleader in this respect than I am, but I do think there is something to not only the contests, but I think that when a team is swarming and taking the ball away from you on a regular basis and getting turnover points, you rush. And you also are aware that somebody may be doing something soon to you that isn't necessarily happening. You get a little spooked as a team. And I think that Pat Beverly is one of the best in the game at that, at just doing things that you kind of go, wait a minute, shouldn't that be a foul? I guess not. Or, you know, shouldn't that, you know, how did that, you know, how did this little guy, you know, stand up to me, or, you know, stonewall me, or how did he draw that charge? How did he wrest the ball away from me? And then with Vando, you have this guy like, oh, we did a good job. The possession's over. Oh, no, wait, you know, the ball's being tipped and, you know, we have to do this all over again. And consequently, when you go back down, you feel like you need momentum. And it's that whole notion, you know, you try to get a lot of it back, especially if you're a three-point shooter anyway. I do think psychologically, the way the Wolves are playing defense, long story short, does have an impact on a team's ability to hit threes.
I think that's totally true.
I think that's another depressant. Does it explain the extraordinarily low percentage? No. I think the caliber of the opposition explains some of it. And I do think you have to say that random variance has been kind to the Wolves thus far, and that it will balance out. But I also think that the mean level, is going to be much lower than I thought it was going to be. Finch openly conceded. Finch said, you got to give something up, and I'm giving up above the break threes. He just as much as said it on numerous occasions. Well, where the Wolves are doing their best right now is above the break threes. I mean, they're throttling teams, and the contests help. And crazy, you know, the one time Ant's got bad peripheral vision still, and he's still a little bit too steel happy or whatever still, although not a steel happy historian Prince, as it turns out. But anyway, I digress. But he is contesting like a banshee. I mean, Ant is running out to contest shots the way Vando does. And, you know, it's kind of fun. People don't realize, you know, how important that is. Just when you see, you know, a large player running at you, I mean, every team, if you watch the pregame warmups of just about every team, there's a large assistant coach or a small assistant coach with a broom or something, but there's always somebody out there making, simulating the idea that you are shooting a contested three over length. And so consequently, they do that because it is it's an impact. It's a factor. And so good for the Wolves. Can they continue?
Can I give you the numbers on it?
Yeah.
So overall, Wolves opponents are shooting 30.6% from three this season, which is the best in the league. The next best is 31.7. The average is 35.
Is Toronto second?
I gotta go full
screen. That's right. Don't worry about it.
Cleveland. Second is the Wizards, who also are the one team who's magically shown up in the top 10 defensively this year. So it's another strong case that this 3-point variance is playing a role. But what I wanted to say was the Wolves are on non-corner threes, those above the breaks. Opponents are only making 29.8% of those, which is far and away best in the league in terms of that. And then on actual corner threes, it's 32.2%, which is sixth best in the league. So they're getting, a good statistical break. Again, they're playing a role in the contests you bring up. I bring up Naz Reid as another guy who's getting from that low man out to contests a few times as well. I mean, they're an athletic team. This is what makes sense. I mean, let's hit on the big picture here. I mean, the Wolves completely changed their defensive scheme because this is what their personnel was better at.
Right.
Like that's more credit to Finch. Like they are playing I've decided I don't like the term scramble anymore because I think it's pejorative. And I think what they're doing defensively is a flow. They're not in man-to-man. They flow from man-to-man in terms of their rotations.
Right.
And I think, part of that is the scramble at the end to the contest. But it's pretty consistent. When the rotations are good, it doesn't strike me as a scramble. It strikes me as a flow. And I think it's ironic because that's what they're searching for offensively. But really, I am feeling it. Just this morning, going back and watching the first half defensive possessions, I mean, you can rip off 10, 12 possessions where the Wolves rotations are just awesome in that game. And when I watch those and I slow them down, I go, this is a good flow from low man to X out to, and sometimes it's not perfectly clean, but it's like they're getting more comfortable with this scheme and understanding each other to get those contests. And that was the thing. When you talked, we had a whole pod about the defense before the season started.
And you said, and I agreed with you, that it's going to be a rough learning curve. Mm.
Right.
That's what you said, and I agreed with you. That made sense to me.
And it hasn't been a rough learning curve, but still, I think they're getting better at it as time goes on, which is in a way similar to what I'm – the thing I got wrong is still right.
it's a higher achievement. It's still a curve, but the curve started higher and finishes higher.
Which is, credit to them. And credit to Finch for going, hey, we're not going to do the same thing that they've done with Cat for 6 years.
Right.
Like, the only time they are now putting Cat back by the rim is when they're playing 2-3 zone. And even in that 2-3 zone, they're kind of like flowing and scrambling around that as well.
It's a weird, it's not a, I haven't, I'm not comfortable with that zone. There's something about that zone that feels funky to me.
Well, sometimes it sucks.
Well, I know. But, I think there's still a little bit too much. One of the things that always bothers me about zones played badly or played the way that I think it looks funky is where somebody defines their zone. What is their territory of coverage? Mm-hmm. And when do they say to themselves, all right, I'm straying too far from my zone, rather than saying, well, where's everybody else on the floor?
Such a harder thing to do at the NBA level, man. Like,
yes, it is.
Though, living in your boxes is so much easier to do at the college level. One, just different athletes, but a functionally a smaller floor with the perimeter areas just being smaller. Now, I mean, when you got 23-foot three-point line, you can't just live in five boxes in a 2-3 zone.
Right.
There has to be, that's why a lot of times, it usually takes me a couple possessions to pick up, oh, the Wolves are in zone. Because sometimes, because sometimes zone looks, you know, looks like man. But that's the, again, that's the nature of zone in the NBA. I think that's an area where maybe there's a little bit of a learning curve, and I wouldn't say they're great at it, but a positive externality from that zone is I think it puts them in a better position to rebound, because now you do have Cat by the basket, right, not up 18, 20 feet.
And if you're playing Vando, you have Vando already there, which means he'll get defensive rebounds that he wasn't really getting that much earlier in the season. I think his percentage of defensive rebounds has gone up.
Yeah, he's a stronger defensive or offensive rebounder than he
always
is.
Right.
Defensive rebounder. But it's, I don't know, man. There's just, I think there's still some low-hanging fruit to be picked in this defense as well, where the three-point shooting's going to come a little bit back more down to normal, and that's going to have an adverse effect on the overall defensive rating. But the Wolves are still last in the league in defensive rebounding. So, you know, boost that a little bit, or at least make it so there's not like a 3% gap between you and the 29th team.
And one way that to would do help. That. One way to do that is McDaniels at the three, which they've begun to do a little bit more. Because McDaniels at the three, I mean, newsflash, we knew this all along. I mean, it just...
including Chris Finch.
Yeah, I mean, it's, eventually, you don't want to concede it, because then if you go back to what you say is not ideal, people go, well, why are you doing that? And then you can't say, because it's the best of a bunch of bad options. You know, you don't want to throw your team under the bus that way. But I do think the emergence of Vando has given McDaniels a better chance of being able to be put in positions, not only coming off the bench, but playing the three instead of the four. The guy's 185 pounds, you know, and to ask him, having him guard Triple J the other night for Memphis, I mean, that's a 57-pound difference according to listed weight, you know. And I believe it, actually, if you take a look at, you know, Jackson.
Jaren Jackson's huge. He's huge. Like, it doesn't look that big, like, gigantic on TV. He's, like, substantially bigger
than Cat. Well, he's stocky
in every way.
He's one of those guys that looks like, you know, somebody drew him like a
dinosaur,
like a plank, and then they put hands and feet on him. You know, I mean, he's very, very straight. You know,
and they shut him down. Like, he had four rebounds in that game.
Yeah, I know.
So to kind of wrap this up, I asked you. I think it was we're sitting around before the first game of the winning streak, before the Kings game. And, you know, I was still a little skeptical about the defense, and you were still kind of on your high horse about it. And I asked you, where do you think this team is ultimately going to finish defensively?
Yeah.
This is, again, pre-winning streak. And I think when we were talking, you said 15th then.
If I did, I think 18th. I at right before, was that before or after the Phoenix game?
I think it was after the Phoenix
game. Okay, then I can see myself saying 15th. I think before the Phoenix game, I was beginning to think more in terms of 20 to 18. I mean, I was beginning to think, to buy into some of your idea that the beginning of the season might have been a little bit of a mirage. But then the Phoenix game really gave me hope, because that's a quality team on offense. So, yeah, if I didn't say 15, I certainly probably didn't say higher than 15, and I might have gone 16, 17. I don't remember what I said.
Something like that. It was like 15, 18.
Two sentences after I say something, I usually don't remember what I said. It's always better that way.
Well, I guess the question that what I'm really trying to get at is, do these four games, which were all, and include the Phoenix one, five games, that were all good defensive games, I mean, have you even like raised your expectation for where this team finishes out defensively?
No, because I do think they're going to become better on offense. And I think inevitably what happens is that you get a little more leeway. I mean, what happened? I mean, when they're going to stop crushing teams and they're going to start beating teams that they otherwise would crush. They were giddy. They were on momentum. I think now they're going to, if everything pans out, I'm not saying it will, because they have a tough schedule coming up. But if they begin to be up 25 against teams in late in the third, early in the fourth, I hope that, you know, Finch begins to trust, you know, the caliber of his players. And, you know, I mean, it's an ongoing thing for me this year. Rest Pat Bev whenever you can. But I do think that if they continue to hum on offense, and they didn't the other night, but if they continue to play the way they played against San Antonio and Memphis on offense, then I think that their defense will, by human nature, lag a little bit. And that's when I think, because I'm saying the defense will be better, I think they'll still be winning, which means I think they'll be able to think they can afford the lag. And consequently, where my optimism comes from, long way of getting around to this, but it'll be a lagging 15th rather than an optimal 15th. I think the Wolves can be a top 10 defense when they have to be, if everything breaks right.
I get what you're saying. I had Adam Mares on the podcast before the season. He covers the Denver Nuggets. And we talked a lot about the scheme shift, right? The parallel between what the Nuggets did with Jokic and Millsap and to what the, you know, Wolves are going to do with Cat and Vanderbilt, whoever. And I thought this was really interesting. And I, you know, one of those things that you really only pick up when you're watching every game of a team. What Adam said was what he's come to note with that scheme and the energy that it requires was that what he's noticed is the first 20 games of the season and the last 20 games of the season have always been very strong defensively, where the middle of the year, it's just tiring. And you kind of, like, as all teams do, it's a long, you know, it's a long year.
And
you hit a little bit of that malaise, right? Like, kind of like the Wolves did in the second half last night, where it's, you know, the stakes aren't quite as high, or you can't afford to keep the stakes quite as high. And then he goes, but at the end of the year, you know, like, it's winning time. You're, particularly if you're in the playoff mix, like, you're vying for position, and they kind of click back into another gear. So I've just kind of had that on my mind as I've, you know, the Wolves are a top 10 our defense right now. will it sustain? Probably not, like, for the middle of the year, but maybe it'll be, I don't know. I guess what I'm trying to say is I could see it having that sort of arc to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where it's up, maybe chills out a little bit, and then spikes again at the end of the year. I mean, we'll see. We're going to see what the ultimate, like, impact of fatigue is on this style, because, man, it requires a lot more effort than what they've done in previous years. I think you got a young group. I think that helps. But, you know, to your Patrick Beverley point, Beverley's been awesome. 33. Is it going to be 82 games of this?
Right.
You know, maybe not.
They've been very lucky with injuries. If you look at other teams around the NBA, the Wolves have lost probably fewer games than any team I can think of in terms of, you know, the core eight or whatever.
I saw somebody, like, retweet or some sort of tweet today where it was like the Wolves and only two other teams in terms of games missed. Like, games missed have been really high around the league thus far this year.
Right.
And the Wolves have been hardly impacted by it. So, again, there's all these sort of things that are going to, like, bring some of these things back down to earth. But again, I contest that there's some low hanging fruit to be snatched on the defensive end. And there's also undeniably a higher level that this team can get to offensively that, you know, can totally make up for whatever it is they're going to lose going forward. I got to get out of here pretty quick. Cause I got to go catch a flight. Do you have any parting thoughts on the Timberwolves as we go into Thanksgiving?
Well, I think what I would like to say is, let's not be like the Viking fans. Let's not overreact to every single win or loss like it's a defining thing in the season. The Wolves might get waxed tomorrow night. They may win against a very good Heat team tomorrow night. It's still one loss or one win. 15 games, 17 games in, They're near 500. They've played a relatively easy schedule. They've had good health. Yes, they've had some offensive hiccups that should, you know, be relieved. But there's no reason to think that 35 to 41 wins is a totally out of whack situation. So if you're thinking that they're going to be a 35 or a 32 win team, or I mean a 25 or 32 win team because they suck a game or two, check yourself. If you think they're going to be a 45 or 50 win team because they just beat a quality team, check yourself. The odds of that happening are not good, and it's probably not good for your enjoyment of the game. You're going to be disappointed, or you're going to become, you know, you're going to yo-yo.
Did this happen the Jimmy Butler year? This happened the Jimmy Butler year. Remember that?
Like, right, right.
I mean, and I, like, this is kind of different new territory for Wolves fans. I mean,
right.
You don't have often a team that's in the playoff mix. And I just remember, like, during the Butler year, where they went on a East Coast road trip, and the Hawks were really terrible and the Magic were really terrible. And
Jimmy Butler was screwing up in crunch time against bad Eastern Conference teams. I remember that. Right.
You know what I mean? And it's like, and that is part of the variance of the league. The great teams do it. Right. Like who did the Nets just lose? I mean, well, whatever. It is going to happen. So I think it's a really good point by you, and it's, I don't know. I mean, I'm here reacting to every game on the pod afterwards, so I'm, like, by nature going to get a little caught up in the moment by it. But
and there's nothing wrong with that. I just think keep the big picture in the back of your mind. And listen, after that, I was giddy after that Phoenix loss, and you know, I was probably happier after that Phoenix loss than I was, you know, against that San Antonio win, or even last night, for example, where they didn't really play well in many respects. So I just think that. Every game is a keepsake. Every game has its own narrative arc, and it's fun. You know, it's great to have that happen. But the big picture is the Wolves are better than they've been in a few years, and there's a firm foundation for believing that they're better. But they are taking a step. They are not taking a leap unless I'm wrong. And if I'm wrong, people will tell me so, and I'm fine with that because by then I'll be giddy over the fact that they've taken a leap.
Absolutely. Well, Brett, I'll look forward to your column tomorrow morning at MinPost, or afternoon, I guess, is when it'll be up. I mean, over the years, very few games have we not sat next to each other. I think this is only the second game I've missed in the time I've covered. I won't be at the game tomorrow night because I'm heading out of town for Thanksgiving, which is, I mean, what a bummer. I've covered so many terrible Wolves games. Wolves are on a 4-game winning streak. Jimmy's coming to town. I'm going to miss it. But, whole lot of season left. I think that's the moral of what you're kind of getting at there. And, you know, we'll continue to chop this up with rational minds, I guess. he's Britt. You can follow him on Twitter at Britt Robson. Read his column over there at MinPost. I'm Dane at Dane Moore MBA. I will be back to talk to you all after Saturday night's game against the Philadelphia 76ers. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving with your families. And I look forward to continuing to do this as the year goes on. Brett, I'll talk to you later. Till then, I'm Dane. Peace out. How I'm feeling, man, I hope it never stop, yeah. Green and hot so you can find me in the crowd, yeah, yeah. Don't let standards ever bring you down, yeah. Hope you dancing like nobody else around.